Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to my brand new podcast.
Insane in the Femme Brain.
Greetings, everybody. How are we doing? I hope you're doing okay. I hope you're doing well. I'm all right. You know, doing all right. Getting stuck in. Just get some things done. You know, we're just plodding along, trying to keep our heads above water. And here we are again with another episode of Insane in the Femme Brain. I hope you enjoyed our last episode. I've really enjoyed doing them, actually. It's really shone a light on myself, really, just trying to find out, you know, about what makes women tick. I don't know. It turns out, having spent time in the company of women, I don't really know much about them. So we thought we'd do this podcast, and here we are. So occasionally it might come across that I'm floundering. I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I'm just trying to be honest. You know, and if I don't really know what I'm saying, I'll say so. So I think that's the best way. Honesty is the best policy, and I think that makes us better human beings. My guest this week is the brilliant comedian Eleanor Tiernan. I've gigged with Eleanor many times. Known her, I don't know, a good few years. We don't really know each other. We've seen each other at gigs. We've never really sort of sat down and had a proper chinwag. And I just thought it'd be great to have her on. She's a brilliant comedian. She's the cousin of Tommy Tiernan, and I've always enjoyed working with her, and so I just thought it'd be great to have her on and have a proper chat. So I think you'll enjoy this one. It was certainly enlightening. You're going to have a great time listening, as much as I had a great time recording it. So without further ado, here's Eleanor Tiernan. How's your lockdown been, all right?
I've had a very... The inconvenience has been very mild to me. Initially I got shafted for the Melbourne Comedy Festival. That got pulled.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Shafted sounds strong. But it was actually, like, we got, like, it was like a six-week kind of chunk that just fell out of the diary, while I think it might have been harder for people who had to kind of hear the news, like, for every individual gig over the course of 6 weeks. I think that would have been harder.
Yep.
It just went and you just adjust. But I'm grand. Yeah, nobody not affected in any way in terms of medically or anybody close to me. How about you?
Yeah, all right. We think we've all had it. We think we've all had the Rona. So yeah, we've had symptoms and we locked ourselves away straight away. And then, like you say, the emails kept coming. Oh, sorry, this has had to go, that's had to go. And then you sort of stood there and you go, I haven't looked at my diary for ages, to be honest. I don't know.
Yeah.
You just kind of go, I think that's the worst bit about it, always, the not knowing. If you sort of knew, you go, right, we've got to do this for this amount of time, and then this is going to happen, and then you're going to be able to do this, this, and this. But it's kind of like nobody knows because no one's experienced this before.
Yeah.
So we're all, I think that's, and now it just feels like we're not locked down. Now it's like they've gone, yeah, you can go out a bit and you can see that person, but not that person over there. And you can see them, but you can go there, but you can't do that. And you're like, what the fuck, man? Are we? I don't know. I think we're going to have another burst of this fucking thing, I think.
I know, and it almost feels like a burst would kind of is needed to justify the effort that we've made, which is a horrible way to think about it.
Yeah, so we can all stand there and go, see, told you.
Yeah. We were right. You should have stayed in. Yeah. You've proven our point.
But this is what we do. We get bored. Everyone gets bored. Oh, I'm bored. I'm bored with saving lives and keeping it out of the way. I want to go out. I want to. They go, well, you're not locked away just because it's, you know, because we felt like it. It's essential so that when you go and see your nan, you don't kill her.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of I've noticed in myself what I call overreaction shaming, which is that I don't want to be caught out overreacting to something. And coronavirus is a thing. And I think maybe it's a thing you could overreact to. You could take over precautions and then you feel like a right idiot. And I know when I go out now on the streets and I see everybody's out and nobody's wearing masks. And I'm like, what am I? Why am I the idiot who's staying inside?
I know. I went out yesterday just to go and just to change the scenery. So I took the car and I went along the coast where we live. And everyone was out like it was... It was insane. It was like a bank holiday weekend. People on the beach hanging around. You're like, I thought we were just hitting peak numbers of deaths. And everyone's queuing for an ice cream. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? It was really confusing. And then, so there's nowhere to park because they've blocked all the spaces off. And they've made more room for everybody to walk around and exercise. You know, like, we don't exercise when we normally. And now all of a sudden, I need me hour a day. Like, you fat prick, what are you talking about?
I've never been in better health than I am
Mad,
at the moment. Yeah. I started taking these vitamin supplements at the beginning my thinking being that, you know, I might, you know, if I could stay healthy, I might be less of a burden on the health services. But I took calcium and my nails are really long. I'm part eagle now at this point. I'm so
just perched on the end of the bed.
Yeah, all alert, staying alert, everything.
Yeah, you'll not come by me. Yeah, I'm ready. I'm alert. Oh man, so you've been? Have you been on your own all this time?
I'm with my housemates, and that's a good, cool. Good little situation here. We're amusing ourselves by trying to find things to do, basically, together.
Mate, I'm glad you sound well. That's the main thing. You sound chipper, which is nice. We've set up this Insane in the Fembrain because Jade and I were talking and she tells me I don't know enough about women. And so I went, all right then, I'll speak to some. So that's what we're doing.
This is for your relationship then.
Yeah, really. Go and find out about women and you can come back and carry on with this.
Okay.
We were talking to someone the other day and I took it right back to the basics and I was asking, we talked about periods and the body clock and all that sort of thing. Just because I don't really know what it feels like to be a woman. So I've gone right the way back and started from the beginning. And asking very basic questions. So if I do ask you anything and you go, you know, you should already know this, I apologise in advance because I don't fucking know. I don't know that much about being a man, really. I think because people look at me and see and hear me and they go, well, you're a bloke, you're a proper typical bloke. And you're like, but I don't feel like one. I just sound like one.
You do sound like that to me. But what you're describing... To me is about not feeling like a bloke. That resonates with me as well because I don't feel like a woman. I feel it's more accurate about me to say that I'm a human being first.
Yes.
And that I just get a little bit of a twitch sometimes when people, I just throw it around in conversation and say, we as women, we do this. And I it's true to say I'm a woman, of course, but not of course, it's not everybody's experience. But I feel like human is kind of left out of the conversation longer than I like.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's that. We're fundamentally the same, aren't we? There's obviously biological differences and things like that, but it's an odd. Yeah, you're right. You know what, I've not really thought of it like that way before. I've been too busy thinking about that's a man, that's a woman, that's other, that's this, that's that. I don't really know. Yeah. It's all. Yeah, you're right. We're just humans.
We all have ego. That's the big thing that is is the hard part of all of this is trying to master that side of life. And I think that's what great, in terms of comedy, I think that's where, you know, obviously the great comedy characters are coming from, is, you know, their massive egos and inability to keep them in check.
Yeah.
I think men and women are exactly the same in terms of ego. It just, we might derive self-esteem from different and validation from different sources from each other. While blokes will get, you know, validation for getting whatever big muscles. That's, you know, a blokey thing. While with women, it's you know, whatever, having straight hair, clean hair, whatever. Well groomed.
And did you grow up in Ireland?
Yeah, I did. I grew up in the Midlands of Ireland, in a lovely place, with my mum, my dad, and my two brothers.
Oh, nice. Because I've been to Ireland a couple of times, and I love it. I've never known a more friendly place, to be honest, and. I'm not saying that we're not friendly here. It's just different. I don't know. I said this, I was talking to Michael Smiley the other day, and I said to him, it just seems that Irish families have a different... Once you're in the house, they go, right, they just, like, the doors fling open, they go, in you come, you can help yourself, have what you want, what do you want? Do you want this? Do you want... It just seems a bit more hospitable.
Right, right.
I might be wrong.
I don't know. I feel glad to hear that, I guess. There's a kind of a family vibe over there that makes me... kind of happy when I hear somebody has had a good experience in Ireland.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I suppose, yeah. Yeah, if you're growing up there, it's different, isn't it? If I'm visiting, it's like, it's amazing. They're so friendly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. It is good. But it's, I guess it's one big kind of, there's definitely more of a family vibe to the whole country than there is here in the UK.
Yes.
The UK seems more, there's a bit of age to it.
Yeah, there's a sinister kind of, I don't know. It's a, I don't know if it's, if they, it's a mistrust of strange, or they don't, there's a kind of, yeah, we'll let you in, but we'll figure you out first before we really open up. I don't know. It's a funny one, isn't it?
Well, it's just so broad. I have to remind myself now when I'm, you know, speaking about English, England and English people, that when I say, I guess, conservative and Labour, which I do talk about sometimes, that I'm accurate about what I mean, because, you know, you could kind of go, oh, the English are messing up the response to coronavirus, you know, when I'm talking to Irish people, but that's not accurate. It's the current government are messing up the response
to.
So it's I find myself, I guess, trying to, in conversations with Irish people, kind of be the police there and say, no, it's not the English, it's the Tories. You have to be careful about that.
You've got to be specific. Although, saying that, you come and see everyone running around on the beach with no clothes on, like nothing's happened. You go, no, it's us, it's the Brits, regardless.
Oh, well. yeah.
No, you're right. It's the government. I don't know. They don't know what they're doing. And I've got to be honest, I don't know if I'd know what I was doing. This is such a new thing to everybody.
Yeah.
Who knows, man? Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
Alex, when did you get into comedy?
Oh, I got in around 2004.
Same as me.
Right, okay. Because I didn't meet you for quite a long time then.
Long time, yeah. No, you have ages, actually.
Yeah.
So I thought you'd been going a bit more sooner than that, yeah.
Yeah, and I did comedy in Dublin for about 10 years and, you know, had fun doing that. And, I guess got a bit curious about the UK at that point and came over. I'd been doing Edinburgh a few times in the meantime and was always really excited about that and doing that. But then when we came over to do Edinburgh, any Irish comics, we would do it and then we would go home and then we would, you know, try and tell our friends and the people we work with there, you know, oh, we've just done the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and they'd be like, oh yeah, okay, whatever. While it doesn't mean as much.
Right, yeah.
While you'd be like, no, it's this massive experience, it's the biggest arts fest in the world. And they're like, yeah, great, okay, but there's a Ploughing Championships on down the road. Two, that's also good, Eleanor.
it's nice
to be here and kind of, I guess, yeah, to say it gives a kind of a context to that, being in the UK.
Yeah. Were you influenced by your cousin? Or did you sort of kind of find your own path, or...?
Well, I had a lot of contact with him initially when I started doing comedy. Like, I did it on my own initially. And actually, previous to that, I used to do kind of glass collecting in a comedy club when I was in college down in Galway. And Tommy used to do sets. Like, very early on, I think, before, like, he would have kind of even won, or just after maybe he had won the Perrier, as it was at the time.
Mm, yeah.
And so that was my initial kind of what I saw of comedy. And I didn't think very much of it, I'll be honest. Like, I thought it was I remember one night I got really drunk when I was off work in my own place of work, which I don't know if you've ever done that, but it's like one of the most, it empowers you with a sense of arrogance that You know, so I was at the comedy club where I normally work at, but I was on my night off and I had so much to drink. And I remember when the comedians was up on stage and he just said, "Will you ever shut up to me?" and I was like, "Who the hell is this guy? What does he think?" He came down off stage and took my drink from me and brought it up onto the stage, and everybody gave him a round of applause for doing that. And I was so pissed that I got up out of my seat and walked up onto the stage and took my drink back and went back down. Like, there was absolutely no dealing with me at all. But that was a question you asked about Tommy, so come back to
that's Tommy. A great story, and we've all been there.
I would have seen a lot of stand-up back then. And then when I was about maybe 3 years into doing stand-up, Tommy was going on the road around Ireland, and he asked me to do his warm-up for him. So do 25 minutes at the top, then a 15-minute break, and then he would come on and do his show, an hour, maybe an hour and 20. And I was in like in the course of a year, I was in like every massive hotel room in Ireland doing stand up.
Wow.
And it was definitely a shock. I learnt a lot doing it.
In at the deep end, Jesus.
In at the deep end. And then I learned so much, but I had absolutely no outlet for that information, for the information I was learning, because I was learning how to play big hotel rooms, but I didn't have the audience myself to play that on my own terms. So I was doing those gigs, and then that was amazing. And then I would just leave and do my own, which were in like tiny gigs in the back of pubs, as you know. But it was great. It was really good. I saw him working every night, you know, and saw how he does that. I did have a fair bit of contact.
That's brilliant. I remember, I'd heard his name, and then I bought his first DVD, and then I remember I'd never seen him or heard about, I just sort of heard the name. I remember sitting there watching that and going, what the fuck is this? And it was incredible. He's a very talented man. And has he been encouraging? Has he kind of got behind you, or have you kind of gone, no, I'll be fine, I'll do it on my own? Do you know,
I mean, he's been encouraging in the way that any like, but all of us stand up, you have to do it yourself. I don't think you can. There's no shortcuts to being a good stand up. So nobody, no matter how many people you know in the industry, the shortcuts to telly, we know that stuff, you know. But to being a good comedian, which is, I think, what most of us kind of, you know, that's the ultimate kind of prize. Mm. it's to be, you know, kind of talked of by your peers as, you know, doing good work. That's what I would kind of love. And so Tommy would be like, be really he in the broad way of like, you know, always you know, saying the thing, he says a thing, if it's leaning, give it a push. I love that phrase.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So those kind. He's very wise in that way, and he's a good person to knock around with.
That's a great phrase. I like that.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And did you find it? Did you find? Because I know I've said this before. So anyone listening, I'm sorry, but when I started in this industry, it's not outright. Sexist, but there was always, it's like they would, when it, so we started about the same time, so they'd have one woman on, they'd never have more than one, and then she'd go on in the middle, because that was known as the girl spot as well. I don't know if you ever came across, and it's only in recent years that things have started to change, like promoters have been more actively, you know, going out and making sure that there are more women on bills. Did you find that was the same for you when you were starting out?
I guess when I started, the way the club scene in Ireland wasn't kind of formal in the way that it is here. In that, like, there's a kind of a show structure that kind of is followed here, and I recognize what you're talking about very much. But at home in Ireland, it was the sexism, I guess, I would have noticed was more just in the quality of the attention that people paid towards you. So you kind of had to, I guess, fight that way. I guess one of the things I noticed, I think now looking back, that I did with both promoters and audiences is do what I could to reassure them that I wasn't going to be one of those troublesome women, that it was okay to let me into the club. And I see it now, well, not so much anymore, but I have seen it with in green rooms and club owners, where they'll kind of say a thing like, to me, with me in the room, they'll say, oh, but female comedians aren't much good, really. They'll say it, and I know they're trying to get a rise out of me, but I think there is a slight kind of to it. What they're trying to do is trying to say, get me to say, say no, women are good at comedy, and then I'll be kind of written off as somebody who can't keep their cool. You know, it's a little test that is kind of sent my way that maybe isn't put towards the male comics, and I think audiences kind of like it when you do it as well, when you kind of reassure them that you're not going to, you know, be going banging on about all this kind of feminism stuff. I've actually been shown a lot by a lot of the UK female comics who would have come to Ireland and done, I would be on festival lineups with them over there. I'm talking about like Sarah Pascoe and Tiffany and people like that would have come over and would start, you know, talking about feminism and, you know, people listening to them. At the back of the room going, hang on a minute, you never listened to me when I was doing any of this stuff. It's because they kind of like didn't grow up in the when you grow up in a culture, you kind of you can kind of make assumptions about it, and you know, they were coming to Irish audiences fresh and not kind of making those assumptions, and it was working out for them. So I guess I have to credit like UK comics for bringing me towards a more equal, to put more quality into my own set.
Yeah. It's funny with the feminism, because Jay's constant, and sometimes in the house, and we'll be watching stuff. He's like, well, what's all that? And I'm like, you don't have to do it here. I'm on your side. we already agree on everything, so I don't know why we're fighting now over the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. All the time I'm like, not now, so I get it. I get it, you know, but yeah, you do, you know, of course you do. You have to fight your corner, of course you do. It's nice to see that that things are changing. It's funny that it's had to be, we've had to make an effort to make those changes. Do you know what I mean? It should have just been there and it wasn't.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Yeah. A mirror in the dressing room. That's one thing that I feel. That's the big change I noticed. There are now more mirrors in the dressing room before I go on stage.
We were talking about that the other day. We were talking about the difference between a male toilet and a female toilet. And yeah, definitely when I've accidentally been in a lady's toilet, it's flowers and mirrors and nice smells. And the men, it's just a bucket of piss. And it,
I know, yeah.
And that sounds, I know that sounds really sexist. Just that's my experience. I've not been in many ladies' toilets, but when I have, I've had a nice time.
It's kind of what I guess it's a microcosm for what way the, we treat our spaces when it's just men in there or when there's women in there. And, you know, that there's a benefit. Both can bring, because I guess men can bring a kind of a brutal efficiency to the situation.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. And then ladies just like to take all the toilet roll and throw it everywhere. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
Giving yourself a ticker tape parade while you have a wee. I don't know what goes on.
Yeah,
that's what it seems like. I don't know. That's the other thing as well. Some of these lines of questioning might not go anywhere, and I might just drive into the floor. So just bear with me while I fish it back out.
Yeah.
But this is, I say, it's new. This is all new territory for me. So I'm figuring out as I go along.
Cool.
But we spoke a couple of weeks ago, and you said. News sounds a bit shit. You have news.
I know, and it is weird. It's kind of the way I was telling my friends that this thing that has been happening for me a few weeks ago, and the way I introduced it to them was I said I have a bit of gossip, and then I said,
did you look over your shoulder first? Like, look around, see if anyone was looking.
Well, that's the great thing about gossip, about this particular piece of gossip, because it's about myself. So nobody, we don't need to feel bad about sharing it. Yeah. So yeah, I came out in February. I think it's not a, there's no exact moment when it happened, but I feel like that's the time that it happened. I started going through that process of owning the fact that I'm gay. And sharing with and including people in my life, and living my life as a lesbian, and it's been great.
How do you feel?
So I feel I feel more grown up, and I feel more alert, and I feel more able. And I feel more, I feel braver, and I feel like I have more of myself now for the rest of the world, and more. I think I can pay better attention to the world now that I'm not. I haven't got this little, I guess, whack-a-mole thing inside of me that I have to just keep trying to shut up, which is kind of what being in the closet is like. This is going to sound too much like material, but what I've been feeling is like, you know, in your laptop, you keep like getting asked to download an upgrade, and you keep going, fuck off with the upgrade. I don't want, that was like what being in the closet was like. It's like coming out was the upgrade, and I was like, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it.
Fuck my laptop.
Yeah, exactly. I'm fine how I am. This is the old system works really well. So I was, when you have that going on, a lot of it is unconscious, but you put an enormous amount of energy, emotional energy, intellectual energy, and a lot of physical energy as well into curtailing protecting a certain secret that you have, and you're trying not to you're trying to protect yourself by doing that, but it's ultimately it's like putting a weight on a structure that it can't hold, or it's not designed to hold.
You can feel it buckling.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. And I guess I didn't get to a point where there was a complete collapse, but it was I could see it coming, and I was trying to, okay, well, you know, what's trying to do the smart thing here, you know, I can wait for that to happen, or I can just do it now save myself the hassle. And I mean, there's lots of hassle I didn't save myself. You know, I could have done this a lot sooner in my life, because it's not like a lot of women or people come out when they come out later in life. It's like, oh, this is something I just realized. I'm in a new relationship now and it's great. Well, this is definitely something that I kind of knew about myself from my early 20s, and just wasn't in a place where I felt confident enough to share it, and hopeful enough that I could expect a good reaction from people.
Were you projecting? You were assuming that they wouldn't take it well, or.
I mean, from the reaction I've gotten now, Rich, this is going to seem so daft, because like when I told my parents about this back in March, they were like enthusiastic about it, like not accepting. Like they were like, OK, you know, you got to get out. You got to tell your other brothers,
yeah, right.
You know, we want to tell our friends, and we can't do that until you have all your boxes ticked. Yeah. So I was like, OK, whoa, everybody.
Hang on.
Yeah. I'm the gay one here.
Yeah, you're taking away my moment, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, if I want to milk it, I'll milk it, okay? the support I have in my life, and I'm very lucky, is great. So now I kind of have to look back and go, what the hell was I doing? Why did I wait so long? And because because I think more of it is down to me than I was initially assuming. The short version of what happened, I think, is possibly when I was quite young. I was, you know, had a bullying experience in school, I became very alert to not giving anybody information that could be used against me. And I guess the world I was living in at the time, which coupled with that, I didn't see lesbians in the world being hugely celebrated.
I'm not going to admit to that. Yeah.
You know, it just seemed like a way to kind of, you know, help people who wanted, you know, to harm me. I was like, you know, I'm no idiot. Well, I'm not going to do that.
Why would I do that? Yeah.
Yeah. I waited a good 20 years to see if that was.
Just to make sure.
I know, to make sure. And I think so far so good, basically.
Yeah. You feeling better? You feel like that weight? Well, when we were talking initially, and I said, because you said it's taken you a while to sort of like recalibrate, because you're still on high alert. You're still looking around to make sure no one figures it out. And so you're going to take a while for that to settle down. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And you have to, like, it's not just one moment. Like every time I say it, it solidifies it as my identity a little bit more. And you know, that's why I think you see so many, I guess, you know, strong gay people around, you know, because if you don't kind of constantly affirm it, you kind of tend to kind of wonder, did I make all of that up?
I was doing something.
And I guess the way lockdown has affected where I am with all that is that because I don't have the facility now to, you know, go to a gay club or, you know, go to a gay film festival that's on, which is the kind of thing I would be doing to, I guess, you know, celebrate that side of myself. I have to kind of find other ways now in lockdown, which is, you know, immerse myself in the culture, in whatever is online, and written. And yeah, it's you know, it's just, it's all about being creative, basically. Yeah.
You must feel the more, like you say, you're having to look online and you're looking, you know, you're immersing yourself in that world. You must feel reborn. It must be an incredible feeling. That weight's been lifted, and now you're discovering more and more about this new world. It must be incredible.
Yeah, it's great. I feel freer in my body. I feel freer in my voice. And it's helping all my relationships with people, because I'm not, you know, invested in them to a point where they might challenge me or you know, ask me about this thing. Even you know, with stand up, you know, I can say it on a stage now, not worried about being heckled with it.
No.
Which was it just frees up so much space in yourself.
Yeah.
For the outside, and it's quite a selfish place to be, actually, the closet, you know, because it's all about yourself, it's all about protecting yourself. So I'm so glad to be able and relieved to not be thinking about myself so much anymore.
Oh, it must be amazing for you.
Yeah.
God almighty. And what was it? Did you just think, oh, fuck it, I've had enough of this now. This is who I am and I need to tell everybody. Was it just that? Or did it, like you say, just sort of, just kind of happened?
There was partly that. I mean, I've been embarrassed for so long about this, about because when I was 30, I would have been late coming out.
Is there a time limit then?
Well, that's what it felt like to me. Like I felt like I had at the time, like what I call now a straight bully in my head, who was just constantly inventing reasons not to come out, like just throwing this shit at me. And now, you know, it's too late. You know, you're too old now. Nobody comes out when they're over 40. What are you talking about? You know,
I know loads of people that have.
Well, great, and
disrespect to you, I'm not saying
that. I was probably hiding from them, actually. Schofield did make quite an impact on me, like, because when you're watching somebody come out, like, there was two factors about him that, like, really kind of chipped away at my head, which was, one, he was older than me, so I was, you know, I had been telling myself up to that point, you can't come out over 40, it's daft. And then the other thing I had thought was that I couldn't be gay because I wasn't fucked up in the head. You know, I thought if I was in the closet, there's no way I would be a functioning human being. And I was, evidence was that I was functioning. The things, you know, everything I'd heard is that people who are in the closet, they go off down weird roads. They, you know, end setting up gay conversion therapy courses. They join the DUP, things like that. I hadn't done any of that mad shit, so I was like, there's no way I could be in the closet. It just couldn't be true about me. And then I watched Philip Schofield, high functioning person, possibly one of the highest functioning, like, you know, what he does every day, you know, hosting a massive show, and how he managed to keep a lid on it, I don't know, basically. But it put it to me then, I had to say, okay, no, anybody can be gay, Eleanor, and you can't be gay, you know. So that was a big factor in it. And, you know, I'd spent the last decade really looking at my friends and everybody, you know, moving on in their lives, you know, putting down roots, having the kids, you know, financially setting themselves up, and all that stuff was going on and passing me by. And I've been late to all of that stuff. I haven't, you know, had, got that side of life, I guess. It takes on a bigger importance when you're in the closet and you don't have it yourself. I mean, I know it's not everybody's path anyway. You know, not everybody. You know, you don't have to be in the closet to be fucking up your life. sounds judgmental now, but
that'd be nice. I wish I had that excuse. Yeah. Oh no, I was in the closet. Oh well, that explains it, Rich. I was a dickhead. That's it. That's all I've got.
Well, yeah, I'm a dickhead as well, and I'm sure I'll find that out. But yeah, it's so all that stuff has been just chipping away, and like it just felt like, and I had a very similar moment when I stopped drinking a few years ago. But like it felt like I had my straight bully just took its eye off me for a second. Yeah. And I just ran in the other direction, like the woman, the kid in room who runs out.
Oh yeah.
He just sees an opportunity and runs. And I just saw that, and in February, and I said, okay, I'm just going to go the other way. You know what's yeah. what's the, you know this like there's really nothing bad that can happen to this. You know.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, you've already said about your family and how pleased they were and ecstatic and supportive, and I suppose if you'd have been brought up, because I know, were you brought up a Catholic? Or, because I know that
yes.
can be, yeah, right.
Yeah. That's, as a part of the story, I guess I don't feel it's a massive part, but somebody could point something out to me and I feel like I could be shown because yeah, right. It's hard to have a bit of distance from the Catholicism. It's just so in the water in Ireland. And like my folks didn't really like they made us go, you know, expect us to go to mass every Sunday with them. But they kind of stopped when we became teenagers. Yeah. And they like it, there was never kind of like the kind of I guess fire and brimstone stuff you know no. that they you know some people describe so but I think just generally it's in the water in Ireland and I think you know shame is something that the people are doing a lot of work on in the last few years. It's like 5 years since the marriage equality referendum, since that was this month. It's going to be the fifth anniversary of it in Ireland.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a big, that was a big moment. I thought about coming out then, but I didn't. I was too chicken.
Even then, that's the thing, because even though the world around you and even like everyone was, if you'd have come out and like you found out, everyone was, but it was literally you putting yourself in the closet.
Totally. And yeah. I can't, you know, load blame. I was still that person in Roscommon and didn't trust the changes that were happening around me. You know, I still needed more reassurance that it was going to take hold and not go back. And I guess, you know, it could still, but
well, let's talk to you next time.
Yeah.
No, what are you talking about? I'm not a lesbian. I go, well, yeah. No. This is my boyfriend. What?
I know. Yeah. Well, that was one thing. I did kind of go, you know, the second you come out now, some nice fellow will come out from around the corner and it'll be too late.
You just know. Go, oh, no.
Yeah. Sorry. I just came out. Oh, shit. Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, where were you 2 years ago, mate? Yeah.
Yeah. Mate. Mate,
oh, late. you missed a good one here, Jesus.
Yeah.
But even that, even like you saying the word lesbian, you know, I'm a lesbian. That must feel I can feel it for you. The relief in your shoulders.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's what. Yes. You know, like they say, you don't have to label yourself this, that, or the other. But this is all new to you. So you saying that I'm a lesbian must be amazing. The feeling in your stomach when you say it.
It feels like I'm saying who I am.
Yes.
It feels like I'm saying my name. Just a very kind of uncomplicated. Yeah, this is it. This is me. And the way we all, I guess, people come to in their lives, which is, you know, I am who I am, and you might not. I hope you like that, but if you don't, that's all right. We can live with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think most people I don't know anyone that really, you see it online all the time, but even then when you see someone that's really anti-gay and anti, you like you've said earlier, you're like, yeah, you're probably you've got several closets, mate. You're never out of IKEA getting yourself a new closet.
Well, one of the things that I couldn't get my head around when I was in the closet was that it was my job to work out if I was gay or not. Yeah. I was like, why is there not a test or something for this stuff?
What, pictures of genitalia?
yeah, measure your heart rate or something. Actually, that could work. That could totally work.
that doctor's thing with the, yeah. That.
Yeah, I bet people would be now putting themselves forward for that.
I'd put myself forward. I mean, I think I'm heterosexual, but I'd put myself forward. I've had some moments in my life where I've gone, oh, I don't know, actually. I've said this before. Right. Howard, when I saw Howard from Take That in leather shorts on Top of the Pops, there was a moment there. I was like, I'm feeling weird, but I'm sat with my kids. And I don't really know how I'm feeling. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. I think we're all more fluid than we allow ourselves to admit. You know, yeah. I think we are, you know, I've had experiences with men. I know many women that have had experiences with other women, but women seem more fluid about it. Like Jade said the other day, she said, she was talking to somebody else about relationships and sexuality. And she said, I'm in a relationship with Rich. So as I'm in this relationship, I'm heterosexual. But it's the way she said it was like, but if I wasn't in this relationship, and if I was with somebody else, there's a possibility I could be in a gay relationship. And and I found that really interesting. I think women seem more comfortable with being more fluid than men. Men are like, no, it's either this or that, and that's it.
Yeah, and I think, because, like, one of the things that I find curious about all of this is the fact that you don't see very many women actually, I think more men come out as a statement than women. I think women tend to come out more in through relationships. So they'll be like in a relationship with somebody. So it kind of ties their sexuality to that person rather than, just being, you know, gay or bisexual, you know, in and of itself, without being a single person, and that way. And I feel sometimes like women have a little bit more, because, say like the tabloids, you know, they chase blokes around, you know, and try and out them, but they don't tend to do that to female celebrities so much. I haven't seen one of those happen. So, but I think it's because male sexuality is kind of, it's just a more kind of hard, describing the texture of it now, but it seems like a harder kind of thing. And
oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, but it's what you were saying, you know, that women kind of are just allowed a little bit more kind of wriggle room. Room together.
Is there a lot of wriggle room in your closet?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So you like the wriggle room, Elder.
Yeah. Yeah, I see where this is going.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
We're looking for a sponsor to help get this brilliant conversation to an even bigger audience. Sponsoring the show, as well as a promotional trailer, means that your message and our message will be inserted into some of Acast's biggest podcast titles. Get on board and partner with Insane in the Fembrain. Go to pauldaniels.tv for more information.
There's very few men that I've met that have said, yeah, I like men, I like women. I kind of just, you know, whatever, whoever, if I'm attracted to that person, I'll hang out with them or I like them and blah, blah, blah. Very rarely have I heard a man speak that way. I could probably count it on one hand, the amount of times I've heard that. Whereas, like I say, women are a bit more. Like women I've been in relationships with, every woman I've known has gone, oh, yeah, well, you know, we were mucking around and we did this. Like, wow, I'd never do that. I'd never do that with my mate Tom. We were never you know, mucking around and then suddenly we're sucking each other off. It just never happened. It's, you know, it's a, I don't know. Men, maybe men, because I've had experiences with a bloke and it was, it felt amazing. It wasn't for me. It didn't fulfill me in the way that it does when I'm in a relationship with a woman, but it still felt amazing. So I think, why not sometimes? I don't know. It's a funny one, isn't it? I don't even know how to talk about it.
I think that's true. Like that, you know, there's a lot to it that you can get out of it that isn't like, you know, all about fulfilling like your exact sexuality.
Yeah. And even being gay or straight, it's not even I've boiled it down to just sex, but it's more than that, isn't it? It's like when you find someone, you know, when you're in a relationship, a long-term relationship, the sex kind of drops away, doesn't it? And it's about being around that one particular person. Do you know, it's more about relationships rather than the sex all the time. And that's
And the relationships I've been in with men, I think I've kind of, because I've been getting all the other stuff out of them, you know, because, you know, that's, you know, I've had some really nice relationships. But I think because I guess trying to project onto them a bit of like, oh, you can save me from this other thing that I have going on in the background. Like you could be a bit of a lifeline here. It put too much pressure on the relationship. So like there was all this kind of social kind of status is the wrong word, but like social kind of validation I was getting. Yeah. From it it's not fair to put that onto another person. They were just, you know, Eleanor seems nice, I'll hang out with her for a while. Well, I was like, you know, in the sea looking for somebody to throw out a life ring to me.
Someone see me, yeah, someone, yeah. Anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Waving at planes, yeah. Just someone.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Like Will, what's his name? Tom Hanks in Castaway.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
But did you? That's it. Yeah. It's that. Like you say, you had to do it all yourself. It would have been really nice for someone to turn around and have gone, "Well, you're gay, so just be yourself." Do you know what I mean? It would have been. Do you think it would have been easier? Or
I mean, I'd say that, but I probably would have like shit my pants if I thought somebody, you know, it was visible from the outside to somebody else. Now, I haven't said that. I think it probably was, but you know, I would have found that kind of traumatic. Like if there was a private test where I could go in and get the information from somewhere. Do you know what though? I still would have ignored it. I think I would have like, nah,
so.
Not me.
Just weren't ready.
I've got this plan. I'm going to be this particular kind of woman, and you know this is going to work out. And you know, being a lesbian is going to get in the way of that. So
And where, and all again, all this was self-imposed. Like you felt you just couldn't couldn't come out, but it was you that was stopping you.
I feel it was me. Like here I am working in, you know, our industry. There's plenty of gay women. You know, the times have changed though. So while I work in a great industry now, it wasn't, you know, it hasn't always been like that. I've definitely been in situations where it wouldn't have been safe to describe myself as gay.
Oh, really?
For sure. I didn't. Like there's nobody in my year in school say as you know is out,
no.
And you know I went to college and
It was quite a Catholic university now, looking back. So, I'm late, but I'm here now.
Yeah, you're here now, mate. Okay. That's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, that time frame that you've imposed on yourself as well.
Yeah.
Because I know people. Their mum and dad split up, and they're in their 50s. And then the dad's gone off and he's like, yeah, well, I've always... My granddad, I've said this many times, and if anyone's listening, sorry. My granddad, we think, might have been gay. But because he was in a time when it was illegal, you know, he just didn't. He was a transvestite, for one, and he didn't tell anyone about that. My dad discovered that by mistake. He went round there and he looked for the letterbox and he thought it was his grandma. And he went round the back, and and he's face to face with his dad in his full garms, and talking about it later on when he died, my granddad, apparently there was four blokes turned up that nobody knew about. All very well turned out fellas, my dad says. They were described as fruity when I was a kid. Wow. I think about that often, thinking about the life he must have led, you know, that just not being able to be himself and then being in, really threw himself into the heteronormative relationship of being married and having kids and he must have been miserable as fuck, you know, but so at least you've gone, fuck it, I'm doing it, you know?
You know,
that must be amazing. What a feeling.
Yeah.
Mate. Well done. It's great. Well done. What am I doing? Well done, you. There's a rosette coming your way.
Good
pink
for me.
One.
Yeah.
You know what? This is it. Yeah. I've never been around anyone that has come out. This is all new to me as well. I know people that have, and I know people that, but I've never been around someone that has literally just done it.
Well, I'm kind of, from a comedic perspective, like I don't think being gay is funny, but I think being in the closet is fucking hilarious.
Putting yourself
in the closet. Like,
there's no one else around.
Shit, you know, wandering into the LGBT section of the bookstore and then get out of there.
No,
people are going to see you there now. You know, or going into a gay bar, you know, as we do, you know, to do a gig, and then in my head I'm going, I hope people now don't think I'm going in here to pick up a date now or something. You know, it's just...
And it's all self-imposed.
It's so daft.
Yeah. But did you feel... When you were when you're going into these environments like gay clubs and things like that, did you feel more comfortable? Or you were just so worried about getting found out that you couldn't enjoy it?
So worried. I was like, oh no, and they're very good at noticing each other, aren't they? Very good.
The gaydar, they call it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was like, people can see right through me in here. I'm surprised I got any jokes told.
just this energy coming off of you. You can just say, one of us, one of us.
Yeah. That's a sketch.
Yeah. That is actually. That's really good. Speaking of sketches, did you ever sort out that the newsreader one that they thought you were a real newsreader?
Oh no.
And then it blew up and it got all that attention and they didn't credit you.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Look, it happens. It's happened from time to time this sketch that I did. People take the labelling off it, and they it's. I like to think of it as like that. I'm just such a good actress that
people can't tell
the difference. People think it's real.
Yeah, well, when I saw it recently, and I thought you'd been in. Being a part of some like TV show, like the day to day, or where, you know, like some Chris Morris thing that from years ago. I'm like, oh, that's Eleanor.
Yeah, well, it was our attempt at something like that. It was our attempt at doing like a political satire show. It was good. It was on, I'm calling, describing it as an attempt in the Irish self-effacing way. It was good fun as Irish Pictorial Weekly. So yeah, we did it as a satire, and then various, all these, you know, accounts that like look for comedy content, you know, whatever, Lad Bible, etc. They, I guess, they just look for things on the internet and then strip whatever branding was on them off, and then just load them up. And you know, it would just be good if they. I can understand why they don't want it. Like they don't want to. They want to, I guess, get all the clicks that are going.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
But it'd be nice if they just kind of put, oh yeah, you can check out Andrew Tiernan's comedy over here.
Yeah, it wouldn't have hurt, would it?
Yeah, Jesus. Wouldn't hurt. No.
But it did make me laugh how you dealt with it. We were talking about this earlier when you went and bought a lot of stuff of ASOS.
Oh man, yeah.
And you were doing fashion shoots.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that was my way of processing the pain I was in.
Oh God, mate. And so what happens next? I bet you can't wait to get out and start talking about it doing in clubs and or is it just to a point? The fact that talking about our sexuality is still a thing. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like you shouldn't even feel like you should lock yourself away, self-imposed or not. It shouldn't matter, should it? We've come so far now.
It does, but also I can understand why it's necessary, because for me, I needed to say I'm a lesbian. It tells me the story of who I am and explains who I am to myself. And that's, you know, like when I was in the closet, I was giving myself shit 24/7 for not being more like a straight woman. I was like, you know, what are you doing in that DIY shop? You know, this kind of stuff. While now, if I'm down in the DIY store and I catch myself thinking that, I kind of go, oh no, it's because I'm a lesbian. That's why that is.
Do you say that to the guys? Excuse me, I'm a lesbian. I'm looking for this kind of paint.
Yeah.
Is that what?
Okay. They say, oh yeah, we've had people like you in before.
That's it, yeah. And he gets this special manual from underneath the desk.
Yeah, this is the special brand.
Yeah, this is the lesbian paint.
Yeah, so like it's like in terms of mental health, like the task I gave myself of being a gay person and saying no, you have to be straight, like that is a recipe for absolute disaster.
Oh Christ, yeah.
Yeah, like I was telling it's the same as telling a straight person you have to be gay now. Like where would you summon that from? It's just not. It's not there. It's not there. But the whole thing of mental health, I find, is that, you know, you've got to. I find goal setting a really good way to kind of, you know, just keep myself go. But they have to be realistic. They can't be goals that I, you know, are pie in the sky. So this, like, talk about a pie in the sky goal, trying to be straight. If you're gay, it's absolutely ridiculous. So now all I have to be is a good lesbian. And I don't worry, I'm failing miserably at that. I'm very bad at it. But, you know, baby steps.
It's all new. Don't rush into it. It's all new. You've got to. The fact that you've done it, again, like I already said, you must feel incredible. The weight that's lifted must be such a buzz. You must feel, like I said to you before, about still feeling like you're on high alert, defending yourself, like hiding yourself away. You must have to physically say to yourself, like, no, you don't have to feel that way anymore. You're fine.
Yeah.
Like reminding yourself.
Yeah, I do. I really have to. Just do something. Just do some kind of activity to put myself back, ground myself back into who I am. And in a way, this is going to sound obnoxious because it's so selfish, but the lockdown has had a good effect in that way, because I think if this wasn't happening now, for me, what I would be doing is trying to throw myself into work and, you know, how am I going to be gay, you know, if I'm
you know, if I've got to go do this gig, and I'd be doing material on stage, which I really look forward to doing. By the way, that's gonna I'm really excited.
That's gonna
about doing
smash.
That.
Yeah, you're gonna be so energized to be doing it.
I hope so. I got like 3 gigs in before the lockdown happened, and honestly, they were the most. They were what I thought comedy was could be like before I began, in terms of the audience's kind of like willing to go with you on a thing, and yeah, like definitely paying you back for the trust that you put in them. That was what I found. But in terms of the I guess the lockdown is now kind of given, I guess it's in a way it's a chance for me to kind of take this at a more easier pace and kind of stay in it, just stay in the moment for longer.
Yeah. Exactly. You're immersed in yourself, and you've got time to do that, and then we'll all be back out, and then you can. Oh my God, this sounds cliche. I know it sounds shitty and cliche, but you're like a butterfly, man. You're like a butterfly. You're like this pupa, this chrysalis. Yeah, man, this is amazing.
And now
you're gonna come out of this. Oh
Find
wow,
way in here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Steph, I need to get some wings of some.
Let's
some
get
wings.
You some. Oh, do you know what? Jade's probably got some wings you can have. We've got.
If anyone has wings, Jade
we've got.
Will have wings.
I can guarantee that in this flat, we've got rainbow wings somewhere. I definitely know we have. So you just have to get the wings, shave your head, Dr. Martens, dungarees, and then you'll be a proper stereotypical lesbian. And then you'll be I am joking. Anyone listening to this, I'm joking. I know that's a stereotype.
Yeah, I know the stereotype, but the stereotype is important for me as well. I know it's used against people, but it's important for me to tell me who I am.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
So,
I really want to. I want to see it. I want you to go full out, full stereotypical, so that. Meatheads like blokes like me. Go, oh yeah, that she's a lesbian. It's just you want a badge? Just not even Eleanor. Just lesbian. Just so everyone knows. I don't know. I'm really pleased that we had this conversation. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, likewise.
To do this. Yeah. No, it's been lovely, man. Thank you for opening up and because like I say, this is new to me as well. I've never been around someone that's just come out.
I'm working it out as we go along.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. But it's funny that we still have that. Like we still, it coming out, it still has to be a thing. You know? I mean, I know it's not as bad as it used to be.
Mm.
But the fact that you still, even though yours, you say like yours was sort of self-imposed, but you still felt you had to announce your sexuality, which is what I've never had to do.
Yeah.
You know? And that I find that fascinating that we still have to do that, but we're figuring it out, and conversations like this is how we do that, you know. And there'll be someone listening to this, and any advice for anyone that's still locked away and doesn't feel like they can come out? I know this is all new to you, and you know you're still figuring it out, but what would you say?
I wouldn't frame it as advice, but definitely Schofield, like it there is a kind of a baton passing effect of the coming out. You know, so when somebody comes out, I was trying to think of an analogy for it. It was, to me, it was like the prisoners in Shawshank when they see Andy Dufresne has escaped from prison and they're still in there. And you go, oh, shit. Yeah, I'm still here. You know, I'm happy for somebody else, but at the same time, you're kind of like, oh, it makes it even harder to be here now knowing somebody else has gotten out. But yeah, I mean, I have shared this on a couple of gigs, and everyone afterwards, somebody has contacted me through Instagram or Twitter or email and said, I am the same as you. I'm dealing with this now, and I thought it was too late to do it, and so you're not the only one. That's I know that for a fact. You're definitely not the only one if you are in that situation.
Brilliant, Eleanor. Thank you so much. And where can we find you on Twitter and Instagram? What's your
Oh
What's
yeah,
I love new followers. at Eleanor Tiernan on all TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, and Twitter.
You're on TikTok as well. I'm on there, but
trying.
God, there's no place for a middle-aged man. We did it at the beginning of this lockdown. I thought it'd be quite fun, but I've did one thing and I've not gone near it again. I feel like a paedophile.
Give it time.
I'll be doing the dances. Thank you so much, Eleanor. This has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
Produced by Paul Daniels at pauldaniels.tv.
I'm Amy.
I'm Louise.
Join us for your next episode.
And today, personally, I'm completely overexcited to be in the home of Arabella Weir.
My mother, on her deathbed, literally goes, "Have you any idea how fattening mayonnaise is?"
God.
And I went, "Mum, you're dying." And she went, "Yes, but you're eating mayonnaise." And I went, "Well, we both know which you think is worse."
We're at the News Building, home of the Times and the Sunday Times, to interview Lorraine Candy.
She just looked at me, my eldest, and said, "What would you know about fashion?"
Oh, God.
Literally my job. For the last 30 years.
Oh, wow.
God.
Join us for your next episode.
By your favourite podcast app.
Thank you for contributing to the conversation as well, because your podcast is great, and I listen to it on the way to work.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.